Hey there, U.S. citizens abroad. Did you know that U.S. citizens overseas have a right to vote in U.S. elections? Well, you do, and your votes count. Your votes made a big difference in key races in 2016 and 2020. What do you have to do? Register at votefromabroad.org. If you request your ballot by email, it'll be in your inbox on September 21st. All you have to do is vote and send it back. VoteFromAbroad.org.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you had a great spring break. We are starting a new book today, and it is called Same Sun Here by Silas House and Neela Vaswani. I think you're really going to like it. It's written as a series of letters between two characters. And I'm going to go ahead and get started. Dear River, I cannot tell from your name if you're a boy or a girl, so I'll just write to you like you're a human being. You are the first American I know whose name means something, so I think maybe you're not from this country. My brother says you are. He says all people in Kentucky are Americans. Not like in New York City, where most people are from everywhere in the world.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily.
My brother is 17 years old. He has a big smile and strong legs because he's a bike messenger.
Today.
All the girls love him, which makes him very conceited.
As the school year comes to a close, a conversation with Rhonda McIntyre, a fifth grade teacher in Ohio, about the struggle to educate from afar. It's Friday, June 12th.
Hey.
Hi there. So I feel like I should be calling you Mrs. McIntyre.
Actually, no. We have an informal philosophy at our school, and I have always been called Rhonda. The kids
really?
Call me Rhonda. So when somebody calls me Mrs. McIntyre, it makes me feel really old. So no, Rhonda. Perfect.
Okay. Okay. This is very progressive. Not at all like when I was a student, but I will participate.
Great.
So I wonder if you can tell me about the school where you're teaching now.
So the name of my school is Indianola Informal K through 8, and it's in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. We are in a neighborhood in Columbus called Clintonville, but we draw from every corner of the city. We're 100% lottery.
Meaning literally people get their names kind of pulled out of a hat, or it's by merit?
They do. I mean, now it's by computer, and I teach fourth or fifth grade.
So I wonder if you could describe your classroom.
My classroom it's a pretty typical informal classroom. We have a little library nook area, you know, bookshelves surrounding it and pillows. We've got posters hanging around the room and student work displayed. Mm-hmm. And the hub of the classroom is our rug space. The rug space is where we meet as a group for instruction. Kids bring their materials to the rug. We do not have desks.
Wow. So you teach the kids for a lot of the day, basically on a rug seated around you.
Yeah, the rug is the center. They come to the rug for the lesson, and then they often return to tables in table groups or in other spaces mm-hmm. around the room. It's important to me because of the proximity. Hmm. You know, I can look into their eyes. I mean, I can do classroom management easier when they're on the rug, but I can also connect with them in a more personable way than I can if I'm standing and they're all seated around the room. And I think that it helps their focus and their attention span mm-hmm. as well.
Do you have anything in your classroom, whether it's an object or a sign, something that kids really love or are attached to?
Well, something that really has resonated with this group is something that I have called the calming caddy.
Mm.
And it's a literal caddy with a handle that is large enough to hold many objects, little stuffed animals, smooth river stones, scented lotion, a battery-operated candle.
Wow.
And the idea being you pick it up, you find a spot in the room, you try and deal with your powerful emotions that are, mm-hmm. you know, creating you distraction or maybe driving you to anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids, they come in from recess. There's been a friend issue.
Mm-hmm.
They're not over it. And they might come in and grab the calming caddy and try and get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we share a lot in my classroom, and kids would talk about when a relative died or, you know, something happening, mm-hmm. you know, in their family. And it got to the point where there were kids that would zero in on someone that was, you could tell they were struggling. They were having a hard time with something, and they would walk the calming caddy over to someone. Mm.
They knew how to use it.
They did. And there are some people that just kind of took it upon themselves to, you know, to be a helper in that way.
And does it work?
You know what? It does work. I mean, it's not 100%, but it does work.
Given everything you've just described and how kind of powerfully intimate a lot of these interactions are, I have to imagine that it was very alarming to you and disruptive to suddenly have to go from regular teaching to the kind of remote teaching of this pandemic.
Very much so, because this is a group, and not just socially and emotionally, but, you know, academically, they needed a lot of support. And I have seen the results of not being able to be there and, you know, check in with the kids I need to check in with to make sure you're getting this done, that done, and the other thing. I mean, it's just tragic. I mean, it's tragic what's not happened since this not being in a physical school building happened.
I wonder if you could take me through that whole process, starting with when you first realized that the school was going to be sending kids home.
Well, initially, we learned on Thursday, March 12th, that school would be closing for 3 weeks and that our district's last day would be Friday. We had, you know, 24 hours notice. So we were making it up as we went along, basically. It was sort of each teacher, each school was making their plan for those first 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, everybody go to the bookshelves and take some books. And we tried to send them home with their math books. We were not operating with any kind of, this is the plan. It was sort of each teacher, each school was making their plan for those first 3 weeks.
So there really was no formal structure for distance learning, for virtual classrooms?
No, there wasn't. I think it blindsided everyone.
What were the first couple of days and weeks of trying to teach remotely, once you realized that this was not going to be an extended spring break, this is going to be a kind of new reality? What did that look like for you?
So the main issue was we were trying to develop curriculum. We were trying to develop a routine. And it became clear that teaching, saying, hey, everybody, be in front of your computer at 11 o'clock for this, that, or the other thing was not going to work.
What do you mean?
I mean, I was interacting with parents by email. I was interacting with parents by a phone app that I have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was getting some feedback, you know, that I'm working 14 hours a day now, and I'm not able to oversee. Mm-hmm. Or so-and-so is sharing a device with their sibling. You know, I mean, just these sorts of things. So it was not going to be a situation where you could teach online.
Once you've done your best to try to get as many students as possible on a device, and it sounds like not all of them could, how many students are actually there on the other end, as best you can tell, in these early days participating?
Very few. So in the early days, I would say maybe 6 to 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Out of 25.
Out of 25. Yeah. Hmm. And then I started hearing from parents about how my child doesn't have any motivation. They have nothing to look forward to. I totally get this. Mm. That's how I started then talking on the phone with people weekly. And one of the students I checked in with was Axel.
Hi, Axel.
Hey, Axel is a really hard worker, but very reserved, shy. Oftentimes won't ask a question if he has one.
Hey, buddy. How you doing, man? It's the home stretch.
I don't like it.
His mother was working so hard to manage 4 boys, 1 in high school, 2 identical twins in 8th grade, and Axel in 5th grade, while she was furloughed as a massage therapist.
Wow.
And she reached out to me and she said, I am completely overwhelmed, and so is Axel.
And he'll go through the first part of it and he'll be like, okay, I've got it. And then he does the test, and the test is harder than the material.
It is.
And not just like a little bit harder, like 50 times harder.
Yeah.
And whenever I click on the answer, it says, nope.
He hated the platform that the district was using called iReady. It gives you this test, and then if you don't earn the passing score, it says try again. Mm-hmm. Well, try again is pretty demoralizing. And he had it. Like, he was done.
I mean, the computer doesn't really know you, right? As a person, as a student. And you are just so good at giving your best effort, Axel. And do you think if you did half the lessons that you could give it better focus?
No, bitches. I hate it.
And so we talked about it, and I told him that, you know, I have been hearing this from other kids too, and it sounds like you're really, really struggling, so let's just forget iReady.
So you just kind of erased it from his curriculum.
Yes. I could tell that he needed something that was going to seem more applicable to real life. And we were studying economics.
Have you taken a look at any of the economics lessons?
No.
Some of them are kind of fun.
That's stupid.
One of them is about shopping for groceries.
What I want to buy is probably going to be Skittles.
So we struck a bargain.
Okay, so Axel, you feel okay about looking at the economics? It's under social studies this week.
And he did those things.
Well, it's always good to hear your voice, and it's good to see you on the Zoom meeting.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
And I did that with several kids. Mm-hmm. And it just needed to happen. I mean, I learned to back off and I started assigning less. And I could just tell that they needed a lot of grace and that the academics had to be secondary. I mean, I always felt that. But when you have a parent basically telling you, look, this is crushing my child. Like, this is crushing their spirit. And I'm so overwhelmed. You know, it just really informed me. I mean, because I have not felt like I've been able to be there for everyone in the way that they need. And I always questioned, am I doing enough? I mean, am I doing enough? I mean, I think that's a teacher's existential dilemma always, but this has taken it to a whole new level.
We'll be right back.
Hey there, U.S. citizens abroad. Did you know that U.S. citizens overseas have a right to vote in U.S. elections? Well, you do, and your votes count. Your votes made a big difference in key races in 2016 and 2020. What do you have to do? Register at votefromabroad.org. If you request your ballot by email, it'll be in your inbox on September 21st. All you have to do is vote and send it back. Votefromabroad.org.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for the New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray. And that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Rhonda, have you been back to your classroom since the school closed because of the pandemic?
Yes. And it was really startling. It's Tuesday, May 19th. I'm heading into my classroom because I opened my email like first thing in the morning, and I saw an email that talked about getting our students' belongings out of our classrooms and out of their lockers and closing down our classrooms, which is a very lengthy process, by this Friday. So as I look around my room, the things that strike me are just the mundane, ordinary things. When I think about how are we going to do this as a class again, I have this lovely, brand new rug. The rug even has multicolored circles, which can actually be a spot for kids to sit. Those circles are about an inch apart. That is going to need to change. I'm just getting a little emotional thinking about all the changes. I look at my tables. I have six of them. I have a class of 25 this year. If we're going to socially distance in classrooms, the only way I can see this working is one at each end. That's 12 kids. We have a caddy on every table. It has markers. It has colored pencils. It has glue sticks. Because we have communal supplies.
One of the things I have to pack today is the math area. Pattern blocks. Fraction kits. We can't share them anymore. I have to find a way for everyone to have their own kit, but I don't have enough for everyone to have their own kit. This is a city school district. We have to share things. Oh my gosh, the calming caddy. This is a real loss, not being able to use things like this. I've been reading that as schools are opening in Europe, some of the safeguards that they're taking, and one is teaching with the windows open year round. I have two windows in my room that open, and they open about 6 inches. The rest of the windows don't open. I'm afraid. I'm just really afraid. I am not a spring chicken. I'm 57 years old, and I want to be safe, just like everyone else. So I guess my biggest takeaway as I look around this room is how I'm going to do this. And there's so much ambiguity. We don't have a plan yet. Ohio does not have a plan yet for next year. All right.
So as you're touring your classroom, you're realizing that it is designed for a pre-pandemic form of teaching.
Yes, it is, most definitely. Basically, the whole structure of my classroom is set up for sharing. Mm. Sharing items, sharing spaces. And it was really overwhelming.
Let's pretend that you attempt to impose these kinds of restrictions, something like a 6-foot distancing system, and perhaps you yourself as a teacher physically being further apart from the students than you've ever been before. What do you think the impact of all that would be on your students?
I think it's going to have a numbing kind of effect, you know, just, it's going to be a loss. And when you're heading into middle school, your peers, you know, they're central. And telling a child, you know, you need to stay this far away from your peers, you know, having to do that on top of teaching, but then walking in the hallway, using the restroom, I'm not able to picture how this is going to work. I'm having a lot of angst about it.
It seems possible that some hybrid scenario like you're describing would be in place. You know, maybe it's not a full classroom, but it's a half a classroom. Some distance learning, some in-classroom learning with social distancing. And I wonder if you think that teaching is ever going to really feel the same.
No, it's not going to feel the same by a long shot.
But if that takes a while, if that takes years, the foreseeable future, what does that mean?
I don't know. I am in the latter part of my career. And, you know, my my fulfillment is really tied to those personal connections.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not getting that, then I have to reevaluate, I think.
Right. What does it mean to teach? And is this teaching? And is that what you set out to do a few decades ago?
Yeah, that will be a question that I will ask myself if this extends beyond next year.
And what do you think the answer will be?
I think the answer will be that if I can handle it financially, that I will leave, because it's a calling. And without the day-to-day intimacy of connecting with children and colleagues and their families, it leaves a lot of emptiness. For someone else, it might be a good fit. For me, I don't think it would be.
It would be a shame to lose you as a teacher, though. I can say that, and I've only known you for an hour or so.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Well, Rhonda, thank you. I do hope that under the safest possible conditions that we can resume the kind of classroom environment that you care so deeply about and that I grew up with and that so many of us treasure.
Yeah, you and everyone else, I think.
Yeah, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
P.S. My brother says there was a famous movie star who died a long time ago with your name. Is this true? P.P.S. We live 5 blocks away from the East River in New York City. Do you live near a river too? Also, what kind of music do you like? That's where we're going to stop for today. All right, I'm going to sign off because it's almost time for the Monday Zoom meeting and I've got to go get ready. I'll see you guys soon. Bye.
We'll be right back.
Hey there, U.S. citizens abroad. Did you know that U.S. citizens overseas have a right to vote in U.S. elections? Well, you do, and your votes count. Your votes made a big difference in key races in 2016 and 2020. What do you have to do? Register at votefromabroad.org. If you request your ballot by email, it'll be in your inbox on September 21st. All you have to do is vote and send it back. VoteFromAbroad.org.
What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to nerd.
I need those officers to be convicted and charged. Because my dad, he did not have to die.
The family of Derek Scott, a black man who died in the custody of Oklahoma City police, are demanding that police there be investigated and charged in his 2019 death after a video showed Scott telling officers, quote, "I can't breathe," as they pinned him to the ground. The video, recorded by police body cameras, captures one of the officers responding to Scott's plea by saying, quote, "I don't care." Scott died a short time later. A medical examiner found that his arrest contributed to his death. And
as senior leaders, everything you do will be closely watched. And I am not immune.
On Thursday, the country's top military official, General Mark Milley, apologized for participating in a photo op in which President Trump walked across Lafayette Square in Washington in order to hold up a Bible in front of a church.
As many of you saw, the result of the photograph of me at Lafayette Square last week, that sparked a national debate about the role of the military in civil society.
To prepare for that walk, federal authorities deployed tear gas and rubber bullets on mostly peaceful protesters, prompting former military officials to criticize Milley for taking part.
I should not have been there. My presence in that moment and in that environment created a perception of the military involved in domestic politics. As a commissioned, uniformed officer, it was a mistake that I have learned from.
Finally, a Times review of arrest records has found that none of the protesters charged with serious federal crimes over the past few weeks have been linked to the anti-fascist group Antifa, as President Trump and his attorney general, Bill Barr, have repeatedly claimed. So far, the records reveal no effort by Antifa to coordinate a campaign of violence. The Daily is made by Theo Balcom, Andy Mills, Lisa Tobin, Rachel Quester, Lindsay Garrison, Annie Brown, Claire Tennisketter, Paige Cowett, Michael Simon Johnson, Brad Fisher, Larissa Anderson, Wendy Dorr, Chris Wood, Jessica Chung, Stella Tan, Alexandra Lee Young, Jonathan Wolf, Lisa Chow, Eric Krupke, Mark George, Luke Vanderplug, Adiza Egan, Kelly Prime, Julia Longoria, Sindhu Yanasambandan, MJ Davis Lynn, Austin Mitchell, Sayer Cavedo, Nina Patuk, Dan Powell, Dave Shaw, Sydney Harper, Daniel Guimet, Hans Buto, Robert Jimison, Mike Benoit, Bianca Gaver, and Asta Chaturvedi. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Michaela Bouchard, Lauren Jackson, Julia Simon, Mahima Chablani, Nora Keller, and Elizabeth Harris. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Monday.
Hey there, U.S. citizens abroad. Did you know that U.S. citizens overseas have a right to vote in U.S. elections? Well, you do, and your votes count. Your votes made a big difference in key races in 2016 and 2020. What do you have to do? Register at votefromabroad.org. If you request your ballot by email, it'll be in your inbox on September 21st. All you have to do is vote and send it back. Votefromabroad.org.